TIG welding to me is the most therapeutic thing you can do. Like, I love it. I fell in love with making things and sitting back and welding. Welding to me is like, it's like an outlet. It's like having a streetcar and going for a cruise, you know, down to the beach or something. My dad was in his funny car and we had camshaft failure. And the camshaft actually split in half. I thought to myself, like, this is a bad one. This is scary. I don't think I've ever run to my dad so fast in my life. And I saw this massive burst of, like, an explosion come out the side of the car and all around the funny car. Anyway, I ran to the tow car and I was like, go, like, go, go, go.
And today's guest is from the Down Under, Monique Ambrosi.
I think that sounded a little bit like it was from the UK. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate being on the podcast.
So we met last year, very briefly. Tell us why you're here at PRI.
So basically, last year I came over and I was networking with a company called FuelTech, which a lot of people would know. And I began my partnership with FuelTech. So I've been with them a year now. I do all their social media management and content creation on the Australian branch. But in regards to being here this year, I got nominated for 30 under 30, and I'm currently 23. I'll be 24 in January, and I just missed the cut, and I had everything pre-booked, and I was like, oh, I'm not going to go anymore because I didn't make it. Then I thought, no, PRI is an incredible place to network. I have got to build some exceptional relationships with companies and gotten to know so many incredible people that have taught me so many things in such a short period of time. So regardless if you have something to come for, you can kind of make a game plan as you're going to be here and then go and network with a heap of companies and you build such a great association with these people.
Yeah.
And then can then continue a relationship when you go home from there, because it's hard being from Australia.
Yeah. So I don't think our listeners know what 30 under 30 is. What is 30 under 30?
So 30 under 30 is, it's held by Drag Illustrated. It's 30 people under the age of 30 within our industry worldwide. They are either making a difference in the industry and are being recognized for what they're doing. So then you'll get like maybe, I don't know, there could be 7,000 nominations. And whoever makes the final 30 approved for that year, they are in a list for the 30 under 30.
Got it.
I hope I explained that well enough.
No, it makes sense. I guess, and to add to what our listeners may not also know, it's all because of drag racing.
Absolutely. Well, no, it could be because drag racing, fabrication, you could be in the media scene, you could just doing something in our industry that's making a difference.
And you have your hands in a few of those things that you mentioned, such as
I do.
Drag racing, fabrication, marketing.
I do. So I actually started out in a junior drag. So my dad has been racing for like 30 years more, actually. So I was born into it.
And what does he race?
He races a top alcohol funny car.
Okay.
So his name's Robert Ambrosi and he races still. So we're just making some modifications to his car, converting it from a clutch car to a converter car. And anyway, so I started racing juniors and then moving on from there, I started graphic designing and I did my side business doing that. So I could then create all of our merchandise, hero cards, business cards, and kind of manage our social platform and build my own. I also work for my dad. I do a lot. I work for my dad doing fabrication. So I'm a metal fabricator. So I build exhaust systems, like tub cars, chassis, extractors, anything to do with welding, TIG welding and MIG, therapeutic for me. Like, I love it.
So how did you... Let's go with the drag racing. Like, what were the influences that made you love drag racing?
My dad, like the people.
Anything. Like, I'm assuming your dad was the number one that made you want to do this, but was there anything else? Was it just seeing how, like, your dad was just having so much fun? Like, you know, what were the things that made you think, wow, I just want to start drag racing?
So when I actually was lucky enough to be surprised with my dad telling me he had bought a junior dragster when I was like 13 years old. And Like, I was in shock. And obviously, being at that age, I was actually quite nervous for some reason. I was like, oh, am I really going to race a junior? Like, I never expected that to happen. Anyway, so I raced juniors. And I think junior drags is, it's such an important thing to do. Because as a kid, you learn the fundamentals of the sport. You learn to just to enjoy it, and you build friends that are in the same association and series that you're in. So they understand what you go through. So it's nice, and you gain like lifetime friends from it. So it was really nice to grow up in. Then I stopped juniors when I was obviously too old to be in them anymore. I think I was like 16 or 17 at the time. So I finished junior dragsters. And then moving on from that, I was away from the seat and working on my dad's alcohol funny car, doing the bottom end and servicing the cylinder heads at our workshop. And I was doing that for so many years. And then we got the dragster and we started building that. When I got back in the seat, which was 2022, because of COVID, like the car was ready before that, but we couldn't do anything. So I was waiting until we could. So it was 2022. And I think that was when I realized how much I missed being in the seat. I feel as a driver and as an individual, you need to guide yourself in your own life. You can let everyone take you so far. Then you need to realize if it's something that you really want to do. Because at the end of the day, it's your life that you're going to put at risk.
Yeah.
All of this is going to be done because you're doing it. And all the time and effort will get put in by yourself. So you need to prove yourself. And anyway, I sat in the seat. And first time we fired the car and I was going into the water box to do a burnout. And I was the first time being in the car again. And I thought I'd be nervous. And I just sat there and I was like, this is like what I want to do for the rest of my life. I love this so much. Like, it's just, I felt at home in the car and I felt like I was one with it. So I think that's the moment when I realized getting back into the drag set as an adult, I realized that was the point where I was like,
you
I love
do
this sport so much. Yeah.
Did you build your car from scratch? Did you fabricate? Did you do all the fabrication?
No. So we bought the car. It was turnkey. So it came running. You guys might not know what Holden engine is, but I bought it with turnkey Holden engine, 355 cubic inch. And I'm actually in the process of changing that over now, but make more power. But yeah, so that car was bought and it was running. So we stripped it all back. And then had to modify, obviously, to suit the needs of myself being the driver and the race team, just to make things easier for us in between rounds and all that kind of stuff. So we rebuilt the whole car, but it came turnkey.
Team, okay.
Yeah, and it was orange and retro. And I was like, oh, God, you know, this needs
to
change.
So what color is it now?
So it's black and gold
okay. For
marketing purposes. So I wanted it to stand out to the kids. You know, I love kids and I think they're awesome. And being a kid in the scene, growing up around drag racing, it's like this playground, yeah. And you get to know all these people and it's like you see it from a different perspective. So I wanted it to be like, well, kids can remember that car. And when they come up to me, like they will remember who I am because I'll do anything to spend time with spectators and fans. I really like giving them my time because I was once that person and I was idolizing the people that raced above me. And I was like, oh my gosh, now I kind of feel like I do that to a little extent. I'm only group three, but it's cool.
And what kind of dragster is it?
So it's a comp dragster.
Okay.
In the States, you guys call it comp.
Yep.
For some reason, we call it modified dragster. I'm not sure why modified, but that's our bracket. We race okay. Modified dragster.
Up here in the States, I don't know if you've seen on social media, but a lot of drag racing tracks are closing down. How accessible is the track to you?
So we have, we've actually had another track that's just opened up. And it's called the Bend Motorsport Park, Adelaide Raceway. So we used to have an old track that used to be there, but they just built a new one. The closest track I have to my house is probably an hour and a half away. So it's called Heathcote Park Raceway in Victoria. I test there a lot, but most of my race meetings are interstate. So I'll run at Sydney a lot. So Sydney Dragway, which is an amazing facility. And we have Willowbank Raceway, which is Queensland. Perth is good, but Perth's like 37 hours away.
So you're traveling pretty far to get to these races.
Yeah, like minimum I'll be traveling 8 hours. So 8 to 10 hours wow. Drive, yeah. So my dad and I will drive up in the truck because we love the truck trips. We do it together. And then I usually fly back and he'll drive back because I have to go to work. Because I work for him and I got to maintain the shop with him and my engine builder. So yeah, it's kind of what we do.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How did you get into fabrication?
Funny that, actually. I was finishing senior year, year 12. We call it year 12 in Australia. I'm not sure if you guys do that. I think it's senior. Anyway.
12th grade.
Babbling. as I do. So I always helped my dad in the shop. Being young, like I used to be like 10, 11, 12, 13, maybe, whenever I could turn a spanner. But I'd be in the workshop and I'd pull engines apart from my dad's customers. Like he'd be like, take this off, pull the sump off, like just be little things here and there. Just to help him and learn.
Was this by choice or?
I wanted to. Like I'd be on the school holidays and I'd go out there.
And you'd be like, Dad, I want to go to your shop.
Well, I started by just washing parts. And he'd have like a parts washer. And my sister and I used to do it. He used to put like a big garbage bag over us, cut the hole for our head and arms and be like, just wash all these parts up. And we'd be like, all right, cool. My sister doesn't like cars like me.
Oh, so she's the opposite of you.
She's girly girl. She's my absolute best friend. Her name's Chanel. She's 26. I'm 23. So a little bit of a gap, but she's like.
It's close enough.
Yeah. So she's my best friend. We're complete opposite in ways, but the same. So it's, yeah.
Got it.
But anyway, in regards to how I got into fabrication, I was finishing my senior year at high school and I was moving into doing my graphic designing course so I could run that side business and still go racing and work for dad. And I was working in the shop as I was finishing school because you have like less, like a least amount of days at school. It'd be like 3 days at school, I think.
Yeah.
And you have 2 days off or whatever it may be. So I was working and I was building a car. I was building a race car that I was going to race. That it never ended up happening. It was a Holden. It was a HZ Holden. It's an Australian car. Don't worry about it. And so I was building that and I did all the steel panel work for it and I was swaging it and I started just MIGing it. Like, because I learned how to MIG when I was 13 and I picked up a TIG 15, 16. TIG welding to me is the most therapeutic thing you can do. Like, I love it. I don't know. I fell in love with making things and sitting back and welding. Welding to me is like, it's like an outlet. It's like having a streetcar and going for a cruise, you know, down to the beach or something.
So you taught yourself how to weld?
Yeah, my dad taught me. So he taught me.
You didn't go to school for it?
I didn't. No. So it's like, I understand I want to get my tickets to weld, but I feel like at the end of the day, passion will take you so much further than a degree ever will. You know, in marketing, I don't have a degree in marketing, but I've got 185,000 followers and I have an account reach of 2.4 million in the last 30 days and a peak reach of 4.9 million. So I just think like, don't ever limit yourself. You know, if you're passionate, learn. And yeah. There's so many different platforms that'll allow you to pursue what you want to do these days. It's not all about college and I believe it's true. Like people might tell me I'm wrong. And that is, I totally agree. That's your opinion. But I just think there's so many outlets. There's so many different ways you can get to places. There's different avenues. Like I brought myself here this year because I wanted to be here. It was a 23-hour flight in total by myself, 23 years old. So don't be afraid. Just go for it.
We probably have some people out there thinking, you know, wow, like she did a lot, you know, and she's only 23. What's some advice you could give out to, you know, other 23-year-old people out there that just want to kind of follow the same path that you did?
Honestly, just never give up. My thing is, I used to let things get to me and I used to think like social media. Social media is a really big thing and marketing is everything these days. You know, you have to be on the socials, you have to be consistent and you have to be posting exciting things and all that stuff. If you don't have that much to post at the start, who cares? Like it doesn't, I didn't. I literally didn't. I remember I used to sit down and be like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't have much to post. And then it's like, you build a platform for yourself. You become more evolved as an individual. You learn over time. You realize what works and what doesn't. Just don't ever give up. If you love something and you can't go one day without thinking about it, then it's something that you need to pursue. So that's what I did. And I'm trying to turn my passion and hobby into a reality and more of a lifestyle. That's the pathway I'm on. Just never listen to people that try and say, oh, you know, your dreams are too big. Like, the sky is the limit, really.
So you're a half glass is a full type of person.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. And that's how you have to be, especially in this industry. Like, and one other thing is, I love women in motorsport. I think it's fantastic. And it is such a male-dominated industry. So I don't believe, I hate when people go, oh, you know, do you get along with the females? Like, absolutely, absolutely I do. Like, I will praise any female that wants to get involved in motorsport. There is so much room for all of us. Like, it doesn't matter. It's just like being a male. No one says, yeah, you can't be in it. You're a dude. No, we're all the same. If you're passionate, you hold the same passion as someone else, then it really doesn't matter.
So what, social media, you brought up social media and dealing, going through that. I'm sure you get this where you probably have a post of you fabricating something. Have you ever gotten posts from like male fabricators saying like, oh, I don't think you're doing that the right way. You should be doing it this way, blah, 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 blah.
Sorry. I put up a post. I really try and stay out of the comments section. I do.
But you can't.
I'm sure
you have to read it just to kind of see where you're going.
I had a post I put up the other day, which actually went quite viral. Like, also, don't ever get disheartened if a post goes bad. Posts are always going to fluctuate. You know, the algorithm's funny like that. So I have posts that just don't make it. And I'm like, well, I did it. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. Sorry. I had this post and it went really well. And someone commented on it, you need to get back in the kitchen. Something like that. Like, she needs to go back to the kitchen. I was like, I'm a fabricator. Like,
can you cook?
No.
Oh, you're not a cook.
So I'm like hardly home. I am, but I'm not. Like, I'm at work a lot. I work long hours and I'm building my street car and I've got my race car and I do all the fabrication, engine stuff, marketing, computer work. My sister does a lot of my cooking for me and my mom. So it's like, thanks. No, I needed that. But no, that's why they love having me around. They're always going to make another plate. But no, people kind of say like, oh, they tell me I'm doing the wrong things or I'll be promoting for a brand like that I work for and I won't team up with companies that I don't believe in or I don't believe they're doing the right thing. So I work with a company called SS Custom Engineering. They're a welding products manufacturing company. So they make welding products. Makes
based
life
in Australia.
Easier. Yeah. And they ship to America like all the time. One of the largest state countries is America. And anyway, so we put up a post and we were doing like the multi-angle block to like sit where it's made out of it's made out of 3D print plastic. Okay. And you sit like your 3-inch pipe in there, mandrel bend, could be a 90 or a 45, which a 90 usually. Anyway, so you sit that in there and it could be like 20 degree angle and you can just mark out where you want and then you mark your circle. And someone said on that, like, they say, they turn around and they said, why doesn't anyone do anything with their eyes these days or this? But they weren't getting, it's like everyone's always got something to say.
Yeah.
Like, dude,
yeah.
Don't worry about it. Like, if you don't, actually keep commenting, please, because the algorithm,
it's just
you're
help
boosting
you.
Me. As soon as you start comment, like, just keep going. Yeah. I don't mind.
So that person was saying, oh, he probably could do it with his bare hands and didn't have to use like a jig or anything to be able to set it up.
Yeah, they're like, where did the talent go? And I'm like, dude, I still got talent. I just started using this stuff. But no, it's great. I don't even mind. Like, honestly, those comments don't bother me. It's kind of funny to read them. Yeah. So I'm just like, yeah, all right. Sometimes you get some nasty comments, but they're the ones that you just need to ignore. There's always going to be people who will say silly things. And it's just like, it's not even worth you getting worked up. You just ignore it.
So you said you're building a street car. What kind
I
of street
am.
Car?
So it's actually from the UK. They're originated in the UK. It was in Australia when I bought it. But it's a genuine GD 1970s Ford Capri. Do you know that car?
No.
Okay, I didn't think so. So I'm tubbing it to have 275 street radials. I had like a mental blank just then. 275 street radials. And so it's mini tubbed.
Okay.
So we didn't want to go too extreme with it. We've got chassis connectors in it, and we're going to build a 363 Windsor for it. So myself and my engine builder, which is actually my best friend, Steph, he and I are going to build the engine. We actually got CP Carrillo on board for that. They gave me some pistons for that. And I had another company that's jumping on board, so as well as my race car that's happening. We got some things coming up this year. So yeah, that car will be really cool because a genuine GT. I'm going to go like a metallic silver though. The black stripe along the side going nice. With the GT. I'll make sure I send you guys photos.
Nice, nice. So what's your goal with the car?
With the street car?
Yeah.
Really, the reason why I bought it is to have an outlet. Like, I feel like I work so much and everything is just so busy all the time. And it's, I love driving. You know, I enjoy getting out and going for a cruise and being able to just kind of let your hair down, not think about anything. That's, I feel, my outlet. So being able to have a street car, which I haven't actually been working on for a long time because I've been so busy, it's really nice. And I'm trying to work towards that so I can get that little bit of tranquility.
You mentioned like you picked up sponsors. What's involved in getting a sponsor for you?
So at the moment, currently, I am proudly sponsored by. I have VP Racing Fuels Australia, which they are an amazing company to work for, to work with, sorry, not for. And I have SP Tools, and they are my two major sponsors. I've also got Rob Taylor, Melbourne Sports Medicine. So he helps out. He actually helped out with the build conversion from standard to EFI. So we moved to that and he helped out and provided products for that, which I was really grateful for. He also supplied me my SP Tools toolbox. And then that kind of like started the ball rolling for my SP Tools gig because then they sent me a message and then back and forth and here we go. But regarding getting a sponsor, all it is just you really have to just market your brand. When creating a sponsorship deck, or I like to call it a partnership, I don't actually go by sponsorship. I just feel like it's just so corporate, which it is, but you're also building a relationship with the company. At the end of the day, the company wants to know what you're going to do for them, how you're going to benefit them in that sense, and how you're going to excel and provide them the income that they need to keep you on board. So depending on what level of sponsorship is provided, I at the moment have product sponsorships. So I use all of VP's range. So they've got like brake fluid, gear oil, and they've started into all the oils, so engine oil as well that I use. I converted my car from methanol to MS-109 and it actually had a dramatic gain. It had a gain of 43 horsepower at the wheels because we put it on a hub dyno, which was fantastic. And then with SP Tools, they're also a product sponsor. So we have like a budget with them every year and they're sponsoring myself and my dad. And we've got like the most amazing tools from them and I'm so beyond grateful. But in regards to getting them, marketing yourself, pushing yourself, you're going to get told no more than you're going to get told yes. You know, I'm in partnership with Ford Bayford. And I cold called like 5 dealerships and I wanted a new car, cold called 5 dealerships and 4 said no, but the 5th said yes, come in for an interview. So then you're going to get told no. You got to create a deck. You have to try and approach people and don't ask for too much at the start. You know that they are going to build a relationship with you in hopes to, you know, make something happen larger in the future. But in the initial stages, just start off the product, you know, tell them how you can help them, how demonstrate your analytics. If you don't have that much, work on them, you know, you can do that. Find like a sweet spot in the algorithm.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to provide analytical data that is so important these days. So doing that, you'll eventually get there. It's hard, but it's not too hard.
Yeah. So I had a couple younger people come up to the booth today at PRI and they basically said their name to me. Hi, I'm blah, 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 blah. And gave me their card.
Well.
And just stood there and I felt very awkward. I was like, okay, well, what are you? So they came up and they just like, they were there and they're like, yeah, you would love to get sponsored. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, this is not how it works.
No, man, you have to. I think what they need to do, and like, I wholeheartedly am going to say well done to each kid that even tried to do that. And that's fantastic that they're trying to build the courage. And I understand it because public speaking is not easy. It is, and it doesn't come easy to a lot of people. It came easy to me because I can talk underwater, but it's fine.
You can talk underwater?
You don't say. Wow. So can my dad. So don't get us together in an interview. It'll never end. I'm telling you, it's bad. But yeah, in regards to kids approaching, all it is like you and I right now. Like, yeah, we're in a podcast. Yeah, we're filming, but we're having a conversation. And you just need to genuinely have a conversation and build some form of relationship with a company. And then go from there and not be like, hey, sponsor me.
Exactly. I think that's the biggest thing is it's not just a random person come up to you and say, I want this. It's really,
yeah,
talk to the person, get to know them first.
That's right. Yeah.
So and like, then you'll get a little bit further by knowing them.
100%.
I'm sure that's what you've done to get your sponsors.
Yeah. So like this weekend, over the past couple of days, like we've got one more day of PR now. And I had been so busy talking to all these companies and networking, it's actually been really, really successful. So what I do is I introduce myself and I basically tell them like what I do, my socials and the race car, and I'm a fabricator and all this kind of stuff, and how we can make a mutually beneficial agreement between the two of us, mm-hmm, without putting anyone out, you know, not asking for anything too much and not forcing it upon them, but just giving them the opportunity. Like, I would really like to work with you guys. And if yous would be interested, then here's my card. And that's kind of how it all lays out. So yeah, slowly but surely.
All right, we're going to switch over to racing a little bit more.
Yeah.
How's the drag racing scene in Australia?
It's good. So we started a new racing series called NDRC, so National Drag Racing Championship Series. And I'm actually an ambassador for the series. So I help promote it because it is relatively new. It's great because it's trying to capitalize on the drag racing in Australia, and they're trying to make drag racing great again. And by that, they're trying to make the sport combined. We've had a lot of divide in the Australian drag racing series, and I think it kind of broke it in a way, and there was a lot of politics involved, and I really don't like the politics. I just want to go racing. So I hope this series works out. I really do. I put my hand up and pat someone on the back for anyone that does give it a go, because why not? Like, you're trying to make it great, then do it. We've got Top Fuel Nitro Funny Cars now, which we never used to have. So we've got Nitro Funny Cars now. And there was talk about bringing A Fuel Dragsters. So that could
really
be really, yeah, that could be really cool. So I'm not sure if that's going to go ahead, but that'd be something I'd definitely be interested in. And then Modified. Comp. Yeah. It is the most difficult. Like, we don't have, you guys have way too many people in this country, okay? It is hard. You just have like 500 entrants at some NHRA meetings.
Yeah,
no, we have like 500 entrants at the meet, like just of comp, I'm saying.
Wow.
We have like 500 of the whole.
Drag racing in total.
In that meeting. Like, we don't, the whole entrant list can come up to 500, if that. But it's just different. Like, our country's a lot smaller. There's a lot less people, and there's definitely a lot less people that love drag racing. But the ones that do, they're diehards, like myself. They just want to race. So coming over here is really cool because you see a different side to things.
So besides the amount of people that we have versus down there, what else can you tell is different between Australia and the U.S. from a drag racing perspective?
I feel like NHRA is like, I'm saying this in a really nice way, but I feel like NHRA is more like the Hollywood type of racing, whereas our form of racing, it's not seen like that. We don't have...
It's not broadcast? Is it not televised?
It's not. It's everything is... We lack that. I feel like we lack a little bit the promoting side of things.
Right.
Like, I don't want to say the wrong thing here because I don't want people to end up hating me. So I'm trying to like be careful with my words. But I feel like it's just because we're a different country, and yeah. drag racing originated in the States from like years and years ago. Like, I just, you guys have nailed it. And I feel like we still need to try and make it that little bit better. And we're working on it. Like, we've got so many different divisions. It's radio racing. There's eighth mile, quarter mile, all that kind of stuff. It's just, it's different. It's just two different things. It's hard for me to explain.
Yeah. Street Outlaws went down there this year.
Yes,
right? I think
did.
I saw you went to, how was that?
That was really good. Like, it was awesome. I got to hang out with a heap of the drivers over there. Like, I'm friends with Lizzie Moosey and Ryan Martin and Cherish. I was hanging out with them, so they were lovely. And then having, like, the banter was funny. Filming goes for a long time. Like, they were like, sorry, guys, hold on. We got to wait, like, 3 hours. We got to go on the start line and film this. I'm like, oh, God. And I think it was just, it's a TV show, yeah? So it's delayed. Everything's, like, pushed out. And that is, like, 100%. I get it. So in regards to the meeting itself, it was pretty awesome to see all the drivers and have all the fans come out to the track. It was a really big turnout for all of the meetings. And, racing was cool. It was cool having them over there. And hopefully one day they come back over and do it again. So.
Were there a lot of fans?
Oh, yeah. They were. I'm pretty sure, like, all of the teams sold out of their merch, Australian teams as well. So
stands were packed.
They were. So I had a heap of my buddies running Fuel Tech, so like John Ricker, and they were all running, and I was working for Fuel Tech at the Sydney and Melbourne event.
Okay.
And we're laughing because some of them are just awkward on camera, and then you have the Americans that are just so used to being on it, and our Australians are like, yeah, because you have to, like, create banter. It's the TV show. So some of them would just stand there.
The
like,
rest is just boring.
A little bit. It was funny to see. It was actually really good. I enjoyed it.
What's your goal?
My end goal?
Yeah.
I really want to race in the States. I really want to race in America. That's a dream of mine. It's also always been a dream of my dad's as well. So I feel like there's just so much more opportunity over here. And I love racing in Australia, and I want to continue doing that. But I would love to get a drive in the States. That'd be a dream of mine, because I just dedicate my life to this sport. Like, this every day. I work 15-hour days to go towards what I'm doing. And it goes, there's a struggle sometimes. Like, the hustle's real. But you got to do it if you love it. So my end goal would either be a pro mod car or a fuel dragster, top fuel, something like that. I think it'd be really, really cool. So if you could get a driver over here, that would be amazing.
And I think you're already trying to set those in motions by continuing your sponsorships and meeting new people.
Yeah. Like, you network here at PRI with so many people. And like today I was at the Fuel Tech booth and I just came across a guy and we're speaking. And he goes, I think I know you from somewhere. And I'm like, yeah, I'm such and such. And I race. And he goes, oh, that's where I know you. He's like, you're that racer. You got the dragster, blah, blah, blah. He's like, well, keep in contact. I actually know this guy and I know this racer and they race top fuel. And, you know, keep in contact and we can see where things go in the future. Little conversations like that and swapping, like transferring business cards, that's where it all begins. If you don't come to these things, you don't get those opportunities. Because over a phone or over email, you're not, yes, you're trying, but it's so much easier to have a 5-minute conversation in person. Yes, it's more expensive to come all the way over here. It's worth it. It's so much easier to have that 5-minute conversation or 10-minute conversation compared to something that's over email and you're trying to communicate for like a month and it goes nowhere, you know? So just different.
What is the most memorable moment that you had in drag racing?
Is it good or bad?
It'd be good or bad.
This is
but definitely
bad
memorable.
One. Yeah, this is bad, but I can't ever
actually. This is
it.
We've always heard good.
Yeah,
memorable.
This one's bad.
Go for it.
My dad was in his funny car, and he had. I was smiling at someone. I'm sorry, they were walking past the camera. Start again. Can I start again?
No, you can just.
Okay,
just
I'll just keep going.
Just keep going.
So my dad was in his funny car, and we had camshaft failure. And the camshaft actually split in half. And I was on the start line. I was watching him. And I was, like, I think, like 18, 19 years old. And I knew, like, he's had fires before, yeah? So it's you see him. Like, it happens. That's drag racing.
Yeah.
A if you think it's not going to happen, then don't do it, because it's going to happen eventually. And I just hope it's not bad for when it does. But anyway, so he had camshaft failure and I was on the salt and I looked and I just remember, like, I think everything went quiet around me because I thought to myself, like, this is a bad one. This is scary. I don't think I've ever run to my dad so fast in my life. I remember running to the tow car, like the cameras were right in my face and I was ignoring them because I couldn't see it. I just saw the car. Like I heard everything and it was so amplified and it was like everything was silent and I saw this massive burst of like an explosion come out the side of the car and all around the funny car. And seeing it from the back, you see it come out from the diff area. So anyway, I ran to the tow car and I was like, go, go, go. I tell my crew to go and they're like, drive in. Anyway, we get to the top end and I basically jumped out of the tow car when it was still rolling. We were at like the top end where the time boards are. So he'd stopped around that area and he had burnt all of his eyebrows and his visor popped up. He was fine. It burnt all his eyebrows and eyelashes off. I ran up to him and I was crying. And I'm like, oh my God. I was like, you're okay? And he comes up to me and he's sitting there. He's like in shock, like of what happened.
Yeah.
And I grabbed him. Are you okay? He's like, I'm okay. And his eyes were like beaming. And that, like, I just remember, like, I remember saying to myself that if anything, I'd want me in that car, not him, because that's at the end of the day, it's family. Yeah. And that's the most memorable moment. Because I think it scared me so much, you know? So I don't know.
You kind of use that memorable moment to help you kind of say, you just gotta enjoy it. Because
absolutely.
Just like, craziness that you just never know could happen, especially with drag racing.
Yeah, and like that's why like our safety systems and our race suits and the track safari, like they do such a good job at being there and helping you. And 9 times out of 10, you are fine. You're okay because you've got the right stuff with you. You know, so you don't have to be worried. You have to be safe, like a seat pull. Do not race without a seat pull. I don't care what car it is. It needs to be in the car. Because if something happens and it rolls, you're going to save yourself spinal injuries. You know, like you need things like that to put in place to then prevent anything from going wrong.
Thank you for being on the podcast. Greatly appreciate you being here. And hopefully we could, you know, get another one going in the future. If you like this podcast, make sure you hit that like button and you subscribe. Check out our social media, Eat Sleep Race, Frankie5ESR, and your socials.
Monique Ambrosi. And that's it. My Instagram is Monique
Ambrosi.
Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, just Monique Ambrosi. You'll find me on there. Thank you guys so much for having me. I had an absolute blast today. And it's been great seeing you all. So thank you.
Thank you. And we're out.
Bye.